Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're back with another episode today for you. I was thinking about maybe putting a intro on this episode, but I decided not to. I've been using this new tool. It's called Sona, Sova or something. And it's basically an AI song maker. And I want to make a song for like an opening jingle or something for the episode. And it's just, all of them are so goofy. I don't know if I really want to pull the trigger, but we'll see. So if you hear a weird little intro coming up, just know that I have been working on that and your episode is not glitching. But on today's episode, we did not have a UFC event to recap as we had Thanksgiving break. It was a great break. Got to see my parents, my grandparents, my dogs, my girlfriend, her family. I mean, it was a great time. Ate some good food, watched some good football. Speaking of football, we will be recapping NFL Week 13. I have not seen the Broncos and Browns game yet, but what I am hoping for is Bo Nix and Javonte Williams to not do good. But yes, on today, talking about some new UFC fights, some new UFC news has been recently announced. Top 10 new things in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film. We have a TV show review. We have a movie review. We're going to also be talking about WWE Survivor Series, which went down this past weekend. We got a lot of fun stuff for you all on today's episode. So let's get right on into it with, of course, new UFC news, how we kick off every single episode. And it's looking more and more likely that UFC 311 in January is going to be Driscus Duplessis versus Sean Strickland. Now, there also is word about Islam Makhachev and Armin Tsarukyan. So it's a toss-up between both of those. There's also word that they might do Driscus Duplessis versus Khamzat Chimaev right off the bat. Personally, I think DDP versus Khamzat is amazing, and you should run that. And Islam and Armin, I don't really know the case because Armin might be injured, but I do hope that event takes place in, gosh, it's either going to be probably March or January, because I think in February they're going to... What's it called? Oh my gosh, the continent. Australia. They're going to Australia in February, and they might do Volkanovski versus Ito Piera too. I kind of hope not, because I think Volk's going to get knocked out brutally again, but we'll have to see. Now let's get into some official fights that have been announced, because we do have a number of them. First off, this one for UFC Saudi Arabia going down February 1st. Lightweight matchup, Terrence McKinney back in action. 15-7 record. All 22 of his professional bouts have not gone the distance. He's been finishing all his wins, and he's finished all of his wins. He'll be taking on Demir Hadzovic. Demir hasn't fought in a fat minute. He's 38 years old, 14-7, I mean professionally, 4-5 in the UFC, hasn't amounted to much. This is set up for Terrence McKinney to finally get a win. I mean, holy cow, Terrence McKinney has had some amazing finishes, and he has also been finished in amazing ways. I mean, look at his Ismael Bonfim knockout where he got kneed in the face, and look at the Esteban Ribovic knockout where he head kicked him in 47 seconds, which was absolutely insane, but I am a Terrence McKinney supporter, so it is always unfortunate to see him get knocked out. He should pick up the win there, probably in round one. All of his fights seem to end in round one or two, so Terrence McKinney will be rooting for you there. Another one for you. This one also going down in Saudi Arabia, a lightweight matchup as well. Abdul Karim Al-Salwadi, 15-4 professionally, did lose his UFC debut this past year. We'll be taking on Jordan Leavitt. Jordan Leavitt, 11-3 professionally, most recently, I believe. Didn't he pick up a win over Trey Ogden? Did he lose to someone? I don't know what happened with Jordan Leavitt. I think he lost, actually. Oh, he lost to Chase Hooper last time out. Jordan Leavitt, always entertaining, big grappler, certainly a personality. Abdul Karim, I don't know much about him. He's from Palestine, so Saudi Arabia, kind of close to his home territory. I don't really know who to go with in that one. I'll have to wait until we get closer up to it. But yeah, Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi, the pride of Palestine, he names himself. Maybe he can finally end the war. Is that offensive? I doubt it. Another one for you for Saudi Arabia. This one at bantamweight. Saeed Nurmagomedov, 18-3, 7-2 in the UFC, takes on Vinicius Oliveira, who is 2-0 in the UFC, and his knockout of Bernardo Sopage, so nasty. I'm pumped for this one. This is going to be a good one, a tough test for both of these individuals. Vinicius Oliveira has proven that his striking is top-notch. Now, as for Saeed Nurmagomedov, I mean, this guy, 18-3, Just, I mean, you know, sometimes he submits guys in a minute, knocks out guys in a minute. Other times, I mean, he's going the distance, and both of his losses, I did not think he lost them. They were both by decision. I think the Jonathan Martinez one was straight robbery. I mean, even, what's-his-face, Daniel Cormier was telling, like, the corner, he's like, yeah, you guys got that done. And when his hand was raised, everyone's faces were kind of shocked. So I think Saeed Nurmagomedov is a tough, tough opponent, and him and Oliveira should deliver a banger matchup. Here's one for you. Of course, going down at the Intuit Dome at UFC 311, middleweight matchup between Kevin Holland and Reiner de Ridder. That's right, Reiner de Ridder. You go out there, you beat Gerald Meerschaert, you get gifted with Kevin Holland. And this is a close matchup. This is a really close matchup. Kevin Holland, where we've seen him struggle, is in the grappling department. Okay? That's Reiner's specialty. All right, Kevin Holland was fighting at welterweight for a time. Now he's back up to middleweight. I don't know what's going on. He'll always be an entertaining fighter. 12-9 in the UFC, 25-12 professionally. As for Reiner, won his debut just about a month ago. Also, 18-2, was a champion in, what is it, one championship? He was a light heavyweight and middleweight champion simultaneously. So, should be an interesting matchup. I'm going to ride with Reiner de Ridder until he just proves to not be as legit as people say he is. Because Kevin Holland, I mean, that was a tough loss for Roman Dolidze. I don't know what happened there. Same with the MVP loss. That one was embarrassing. Kevin Holland does need a win. I don't think he gets it in this one. Women's matchup for you going down in London, March 22nd at the O2 Arena. Strawweight Shauna Bannon, 1-1 in the UFC. You know, she's fought on the last two cards in London, and she's back in for another one. She'll be taking on Pooja Tomar, 9-4, won her debut over Ryana Dos Santos. This should be an interesting one. One of the few female fighters from India, actually might be one of the only ones. You know, her split decision win wasn't the most impressive. I didn't even think she really won it. Shauna Bannon, nothing too impressive from her. She'll win over Elise Ardeline. So I'm going to go Shauna in this one. There's little to be desired, although Shauna is more known for her looks than her fighting ability. But hey, don't knock Pooja Tomar. She's not a bad-looking female. They just all, they're just all MMA fighters, you know. They're all kind of jacked women. Here's another one for you. UFC Vegas 103, March 1st. Damn it. Damn it. They're doing another Vegas event. I thought we were done with the Apex. Goodness me. UFC Vegas 103. That means I'm guaranteed three Apex events to kick off my new year. Middleweight division, Cody Brundage. Cody Brundage back in action. 10-6. Coming off of the Bo Nickel loss, I believe, was his last time he fought. I can't even remember with this guy. He'll be taking on Ryan Loader. Ryan Loader, 9-1, was the winner of the Ultimate Fighter Season 32. Picked up a win over Robert Valentine. Looked dominant in that one. This should be a good grappling matchup. This should be a really good grappling matchup. And Cody Brundage, you know, we saw Bo Nickel. He had to go to round two with him. He has great grappling. We'll see how he looks. But Cody Brundage, always hit or miss. You never know what you're going to get. Cody Brundage. And the final new fight that has been announced, this was 4 days ago, actually, and I'm recording this on December 2nd. So, this one, featherweight fight for UFC Vegas 103, March 1st. William Gomez back in action, 4-0 in the UFC. Recently got a big win over Johannerson Brito, which I did not think he won that decision. He'll be taking on the 10-0 with 10 knockouts, Haider Amil, who had a fantastic finish of Fern Garcia last time out. Also, his Jiang Lee win, that one was dominant. Holy cow, this guy is just like a bat out of hell when he fights. He just brings the thunder right away. Haider Amil, William Gomez. You know, William, I thought they were going to be sending him up the rankings. No, they're giving him an up-and-comer in Haider Amil, the Jaguar, William Gomez, versus the Hurricane, Haider Amil. Great nicknames, great fight. I'm excited for that one. Should be very, very entertaining. But yes, no more UFC events or news, unfortunately. I'm sure stuff will come out here and there. One of the big things on social media has been Jamal Hill going off on Jiří Procházka ahead of their fight going down at UFC 311. And Jamal Hill, I've never seen a sore loser like him before. He was basically saying that him getting knocked out by Alex Barra wasn't as bad as Jiří Procházka getting knocked out by Alex Barra. Despite both the times Jiří's been knocked out, they've been in round two. Meanwhile, Jamal Hill could barely make it 3 minutes. Yeah, Jamal Hill has definitely some concussion issues, I think. So, no more news on that, but we will be looking forward to UFC 310. So stay tuned this week for our prediction show. It should be very, very good, very entertaining, almost surreal, almost movie-like, almost very movie-like. But yes, discussing film, movies, you know, kind of a bad segue. You know, I try with my segues. I really try and segue good. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. It is what it is, but here are your top 10 new things in pop culture, courtesy of discussing film. First off, number one, a new PS5 update now allows players to customize their startup animation and audio to PS1, PS2, PS3, or PS4 animations. Oh, how cool. Everyone loves nostalgia, and PlayStation really helping us out with that. You know, I actually have a PS5. I just don't really use it that often. It was gifted to me by my grandfather, who he didn't even really want to use it. You know, I'm just an Xbox guy more and more. Although I don't have Xbox Live or PlayStation, like online or whatever, so I can't actually play online with anyone, because it's just an extra subscription that I don't want to pay for. So that's certainly something. Number two, Squid Games will have a crossover with Call of Duty in January. I mean, what game isn't having a crossover? But that one's really easy to, how do I put it, make a, oh gosh, what am I thinking of? It's really easy to put those just masks or whatever they wear onto a character and throw them in a game. So I wouldn't say that's not impressive, but it's kind of like, you know, Fortnite's already done every single crossover. Call of Duty's just trying to compete. Number three, Wednesday season 2 has wrapped filming. Oh, that's good to hear. We're starring Jenna Ortega. I liked Wednesday season 1. It was pretty good. You know, Jenna Ortega had that one dance with the Lady Gaga music that was trending super well. And honestly, it was one of those shows where it kept you guessing. It kept you wanting to watch the next episode. The main issue is they've just taken forever for season 2 to come out. And I don't really want to say the hype has died, but certainly not as popular as it was. I will be intrigued, though. I will be intrigued. I'll definitely be watching that if I do get Netflix again. We'll have to see. Number four, this has been the highest grossing Thanksgiving weekend ever for movies, with $422 million domestically in the United States. Moana 2 made $221 million, Wicked made $117 million, and Gladiator 2 made $44 million. Over 30 million people in the U.S. went to the movie theater during this Thanksgiving break. Yeah, Moana 2, big hit, a lot of money to be made there. I have no interest. Wicked, $117 million, a lot of people went, I have no interest. Gladiator 2, I have to see the first Gladiator before I go see this new one, you know, because I've heard the first Gladiator is one of the best films ever made. Russell Crowe said it's his favorite movie he's ever made. But you know what? It's good to hear people are going to the movie theaters, because I love the movies. Number, what are we on, 5? Moana 2 opens with $386 million worldwide, is the highest opening for an animated film worldwide, is the biggest Thanksgiving opening in the U.S. ever. Yeah. I guess Moana 2's it. You know, I don't really know much about Moana 2, if I'm being honest. I never saw Moana 1. It's not really my cup of tea. But hey, good for The Rock. Good for whoever voices Moana. That's all I got there. Number 6, the Godzilla skin has been added to Fortnite. Wow. Will you look at that? Will you look at that? They got Godzilla in Fortnite. Now, what don't they have in Fortnite? What don't they have in Fortnite? It is, I mean, I'm just sick of Fortnite at this point. I have no interest in playing it. The game died out for me. And I always wondered, will Fortnite always be around? I think it is always going to be around. But I'm going to tell my kids, don't play Fortnite, because it's a dumb freaking game. I mean, it sucks your money, sucks up your time. But then again, you do make good memories when you're playing with your friends. And just like that, we're reminiscing, just like the PlayStation is allowing screens. I don't know what I'm saying. Number 7, Tom Cruise is set to star in a supernatural thriller called Deeper, which is directed by Doug Liman. The film follows an astronaut on a deep sea dive exploring a newly discovered trench, who soon finds himself confronted by a sinister and dangerous force. Sign me up. Sign me up. This is my type of movie. This is my type of thing. And this is one of those things where I think they put this stuff directly in front of you to make you think like, oh, this is Hollywood. But no, NASA stopped exploring the oceans for a reason. They found something down there. And I think it is alien. I think it's evil. And I think this movie is a way of telling the people, hey, this is what's really going on. Oh, my goodness. Number eight. What's something good? Anything good? Kong skin will be coming to Fortnite in Chapter 6. Huh. I'm sorry I told you all that, because really, I don't care. Here we go. Number 9. The joke that Disney asked to be removed from Deadpool and Wolverine the movie has been revealed. F-word, what we cannot even afford one more X-Man? Disney is so cheap, I can barely breathe with all this Mickey Mouse cock in my throat. Now that is absolutely hilarious. I wish they would have let them say that. Deadpool and Wolverine, one of the better movies of the year. And when the end of the year comes and we do our end of the year rankings, I mean, Deadpool and Wolverine, it's going to be up there for one of the new movies I saw. It's weird that they censored that joke out of everything. Why? Because it was offensive. Number 10. Oh, gosh. What is it? There honestly hasn't been too much big stuff. Gosh, I don't even know, guys. Number 10, I just have no new news. I have no new news for you. Here you go. Lee Jung-jae says he was shocked by some of the racist backlash to The Acolyte, which was a Star Wars TV show. My feelings were hurt, he said. I can only have faith that racism will end someday, even though it's going to be hard. Well, I don't know what racism he faced. I don't know why anyone was hating on an Asian Jedi. I mean, have we not seen that Yoda was in there? That's a little green guy. He's a little goblin. So I don't really get what racism he was facing. I'm sorry to hear that, Lee Jung-jae. And Lee Jung-jae, he stars in Squid Games. He's the main character. So, Lee, sorry you had to deal with racism. I had no part in it. So don't blame me. Don't blame me. I'm just a little podcast host. I don't do anything. So yeah, those are your top new things in pop culture. Nothing too exciting. Nothing really leaping out at me in terms of new pop culture. Maybe we only do this once a week or something. And we can get big, big news. But yeah, that's all you get for all your sci-fi news in terms of pop culture. But what we do have is a movie review, guys. This past weekend, I got around to watching Alien Romulus. I had been on an Alien binge this past summer. I watched all the Alien movies. I didn't really like any of them. But this new Alien Romulus movie, I really liked. A little science fiction horror film. And it may be my favorite Alien horror film. Really great film overall. It gets a 7.9 out of 10 for me. You know, the only real main thing I can point out is the unrealisticness of it, which I understand the whole premise of aliens and stuff, but really it shocked me at points. It was good, and there were some scary jump scares, some scary moments, really some tense parts. And I rocked with it. It cost $80 million to make, made $360 million at the box office. So, to successful overall. Entire premise of the film, there's essentially this girl and her android. And, of course, the androids look like people. And they want to get off this planet because, you know, they're like miners or whatever on this planet. Of course, it's all based on the, oh my gosh, what's the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. There's a bunch of lore in the Alien universe. And, you know, they meet up with like four other people and they all go up into space and they go onto this Romulus ship. And what do you know? The Romulus ship, it has aliens on it. One by one, the people are all picked off in brutal fashion, might I add. Oh my gosh. Got some chest bursters going on. You got acid dripping down on some guy shooting an alien, and he's freaking getting acid all over him, which that guy sucked. Bjorn, character in the film, he absolutely sucked. Glad that he died. Good graphics. What am I looking for? It was very good acting. I don't know. It was just a very whole film. And one of the big reveals was, you know, they get off this main ship onto their other ship, and you thought like the movie was over. And then you had another 30 minutes of fighting with this other creature, alien thing. It was like a human hybrid. It was a big shocker, if you will. But yes, Alien Romulus, up there in the Alien universe, definitely, I would say so. I will say the one thing about this film is that the pacing, that's the word, the pacing of this film was very good, because, you know, this is a two-hour movie, but it didn't feel like 2 hours. Truly, the pacing went really well. There was action, there was downtime, and the connection to the characters felt there. You know, you hated certain characters, you didn't hate certain characters. And truly, the androids are the only smart people in the film, because, you know, there's this moment where the android, which they had a nostalgic moment from the first Alien, where they CGI'd some, the guy who played, like, the original android from the first Alien movie in the 70s, they had him in this, and he was telling the other android, he's basically like, hey, you have to complete the mission, for whatever their mission was, but you have to understand that the humans have emotions, and they will be manipulated by their own emotions, and you saw that throughout the film. You know, and there's an alien coming to get this girl, and the alien was leaving the girl to, like, try and get through the door, and once they opened the door, it would have gotten through, and the android is pretty much just like, we can't open this, it's a trap, and sure enough, it was a trap. So, good stuff there, good with the pacing, I like some of the elements they did there. The cast, very good. Kaylee Spanny, she was in her first major role. She also starred in Pacific Rim 2, which wasn't that good of a movie, but she was really good in this one. Played Rain Cora Dean. Also had David Johnson. He played the android Andy in the film. He starred on HBO series Industry. I haven't watched that. Tyler Harrison played the love interest, or the ex-boyfriend. It wasn't really the love interest. He was in nothing really that we know. You also had Isabella Moner. She was in Transformers The Last Night. Oh, my gosh. Isabella Mersad. She played the... What's it called? She played the kid in Transformers 5. What's it called? I can't remember her name. She was like the one that just ran into Mark Wahlberg or whatever. So she was pretty good. She kind of got absolutely obliterated, not even gonna lie. You also had Spike Fern. He played the villain almost, if you want to call that. And Aylin Wu, she wasn't really in anything. But yeah, you know, it was only a 6-7 person cast, which is pretty good. And yeah, good stuff. And it kind of ends with a setup for a potential another movie. It ends with them surviving, escaping, and heading towards a better future. But if I can make a ranking of the Alien movies, you know, kind of towards the bottom, I'd say Alien 3. Alien 3 didn't really pique my interest. I would, honestly, this is like, only because of the graphic effects is the first Alien movie. It just doesn't have as good a graphics. Like, looking at it as a whole, it's a great movie. But the graphics of it with the alien, it's like the 10 scenes, it's not really there, personally, to say. So I'd put that... Actually, I'm not going to put that at the bottom because... was it Alien... Alien, what's it called? What's it? Prometheus. Prometheus was a wacky movie. Prometheus was a wacky movie. Alien Covenant... another wacky one. I have to put the original Alien above both of those, you know, the Michael Fassbender ones. And I think this is honestly my number two favorite Alien movie, Alien Romulus. It did exactly what it needed to. It didn't do anything extra. It didn't go over the top. It did exactly what it needed to, and it worked. And it worked perfectly. And obviously, Aliens, the sequel, is one of the best movies of all time, pretty much regarded. So that will definitely be number one. But Alien Romulus, it's good. It would make me want to see another film of some regard, but apparently they're making an Alien Earth or something, some TV show coming out. I don't know. Alien Romulus 7.9. If you need a little movie to watch with the girlfriend or something, check it out. And I'll tell you something else I did watch with Lexi, and it was absolutely insane. Cobra Kai Season 6 Part 2. Cobra Kai Season 6 Part 2, and I thought it was it. Guys, if you didn't know, all right, Cobra Kai Season 6 Part 2 isn't the end of Cobra Kai. I thought I was watching the final 5 episodes of Cobra Kai, and as we're getting towards the end, I'm like, no stories are being really concluded, and we get to the end, and it's a cliffhanger, and we have to wait till February 13th for Part 3. Oh my goodness, Cobra Kai Part 2 Season 6 is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. Of course, there is always the funny, absolutely funny, hilarious, cringy scenes in this. And some people hate it, but I personally find it is what makes this series, this franchise, if you will, as funny as it is. But I mean, we kick things off in Season 6, Part 2. Of course, we ended Season 6, Part 1 with the big reveal that Tori had joined Cobra Kai, and Cobra Kai is in the Tekkai, whatever you want to call it, the National Karate Tournament of the Universe, whatever it is. You know, it kicks things off. Everyone lands in Barcelona. There's stuff going on there. Lots of big stuff. Chosen arrives. Miyagi-Do is taking on everyone. They actually introduce a new character, new teams, and it's all tying back together. And I'm not going to give away any spoilers. Okay, I don't really want to give away any spoilers. But basically, there's a new team that's actually better than Cobra Kai, better than Miyagi-Do, and there are certain ties to a character we didn't even realize. They also have a very very good-looking two new badasses, if you will. There's this new girl and this new guy, and they're like the best in the world, if you will. And they actually kind of beat Cobra Kai to kick things off. Then you have Johnny and Daniel. They're going through issues. Daniel is Daniel LaRusso. He's trying to figure out stuff with Miyagi. Mr. Miyagi? Yeah, Mr. Miyagi and his past, and he's off trying to find stuff. Johnny realizes that Carmen is going into labor, and he actually leaves with Miguel. These aren't really huge spoilers, but, you know, they actually come back like an episode later, which makes no sense that we're flying from California all the way to Barcelona. Then we're just flying all the way back. There's definitely some time issues going on there. Chosen and the one Cobra Kai lady who is Kreese's like secondhand woman or whatever, they have a little thing going on. It is super good, and it ends with an insane cliffhanger. And I mean, the final episode. I don't really want to give away spoilers. I've already said a couple things, but, you know, I'll stop saying anything. But it ends with such a cliffhanger. I couldn't believe it. I was standing up. My jaw was on the floor. It was phenomenal. I don't know what they put into Cobra Kai Season 6, but it is good. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid of Cobra Kai Season 6. I mean, just, I'll tell you, it's got me hyped. It's gotten me hyped. It gets a 9 out of 10 on the Cobra Kai scale. All right, it gets 9 out of 10. What does Johnny do? Just quiet, whatever it is. But man, it is so good. Crease's meth thing, and I honestly think people are gonna die in the final 5 episodes. I don't know. In the final episode, it's already titled X Degenerate. I don't know what it is, but this is the first 15 episode season of Cobra Kai coming to an end February 13th. I'll be sad to see it go. It's been so entertaining. It's been so good. And it's just kind of a shame to see it all go. But I, you know what? It's been a fun ride. It's been a good time. And, you know, part one, they have some ratings out for that. 1.1 billion minutes of viewing time on this season. Impressive enough. Everyone's giving it 9 out of 10s, 8 out of 10s, 7 out of 10s, 7.8 out of 10s, 85%. So a lot of good stuff. You know, Metacritic has the lowest score for Cobra Kai Season 6 with 67 out of 100. Mind you, that was only 11 critics. That I don't understand how we just assigned 11 critics to an entire site, but I guess that's that. But Cobra Kai Season 6 Part 2, check it out. By the way, if you haven't watched Cobra Kai in general, please check out Cobra Kai. It is a fantastic show. It is funny. It has badass moments. The music, the soundtrack, the comedy, everything's there. And I'll definitely be back to talk about more when we get to Season 6 Part 3. Exciting stuff. I should do a Cobra Kai ranking of every season. We'll have to see, and we'll see who is the survivors after the show has come to an end. And look who else were some survivors, and that is Team Roman Reigns, because guess what? WWE Survivor Series went down this past weekend in, I believe it was British Columbia, went down in Vancouver, Canada, and it was entertaining. I was able to watch it when I was hanging out with the girlfriend, watching on the phone. The 38th annual Survivor Series, of course, going down. WWE entertaining on the final PLEs of the year. Just under 18,000 fans packed the Rogers Arena in British Columbia, Canada. We had 5 matches. Let me give my thoughts on each of them. And something I saw some other wrestling creators bringing up was that the crowd was not really into it. And I gotta be honest, I don't know if it's Canadians just are quiet people, if they're just respectful or something, but they didn't boo, they didn't cheer, they honestly didn't do anything really. The crowd was pretty dead the whole event. They had a couple good moments, but one thing I was pointing out, which I've noticed, is they have this crowd meter, which if you've ever been to sports games, and you know they have a crowd meter, it's like the decibels, and usually when a superstar enters, like, the decibel meter goes from, like, 80 to 100, and when LA Knight came out, he was the United States champion, his decibel meter didn't go up at all. It was a pretty comical moment, so I don't really want to say this was a complete failure of an event, but there were some highs, there were some lows. Let's talk about it. So kicking things off, the women's War Games match. So the entire premise of a War Games match is there's two wrestling rings, and they have a giant steel cage around them, and then at the front of the entrance, you have four people in cages, if you will, like literally like shark cages, if you will, and every 3 minutes, someone's let out to come and help their teammate, and once everyone's in the War Games matchup, five people each, the match officially begins. So we kick things off, and you had Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Naomi, Io Sky, and Bayley taking on the Liv Morgan, who's the WWE Women's Champion, Raquel Rodriguez, Nia Jax, who's the WWE Women's World Champion, Tiffany Stratton, who's the Women's Money in the Bank holder, and Candice LeRae. And honestly, it wasn't too bad of a match. A couple botches here and there. Always funny. But I knew the babyfaces would win. There's nothing real shocking here. I find it insane that Rhea Ripley continues to pin Liv Morgan, yet never is able to win the belt. It is kind of comical that both of our champions and our Money in the Bank holder for women's all lost in this matchup. It was certainly something that I was not anticipating to that extent. But, I mean, the good girls, good guys, whatever you want to call it, the baby faces walking out on top. Rhea Ripley looking cool as ever. She had this, like, mask on. It looked like a skull or something. It looked super dope because her face was fractured or something. Bianca Belair in this matchup without Jade Cargo. Found that very interesting. Naomi, good as ever. Io Sky was absolutely phenomenal in this match. She had a moment where she put a trash can over herself, and she did a backflip off the top of the cage and landed on everyone. It was insane. Tiffany Stratton looking amazing as well. Just good overall. Good match overall. Does it further storytelling? I don't know. I don't know if it really does. I mean, I don't know what they're really building up to. I think we're just waiting for Nia Jax to get cashed on by Tiffany Stratton. I know they want Charlotte to return. So maybe Charlotte returns, takes the belt off of Nia Jax, Tiffany Stratton cashes in, something like that. And they're also building up to a rematch between Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan for, I think it is, WrestleMania. I don't know what they're going to do. So it's an okay match. 38 minutes, 15 seconds. So a long match. It takes a while. But the crowd just didn't really seem too into it. And I'll say when the crowd's not into something, it really puts a damper on everything. So this is something to keep aware of. But kicking off the night, not too bad. After that, United States Championship match between LA Knight and the returning Shinsuke Nakamura, who's only been back for 2 weeks. Shinsuke Nakamura has only been back for 2 weeks, and 9 minutes, 45 seconds, how long this match lasted, pretty even matchup. Shinsuke Nakamura hits his finisher, wins the belt. All that LA Knight hype that he had going into SummerSlam, post-SummerSlam, it's done. You know, LA Knight, back to the mid card, back to being regular. Shinsuke Nakamura is your United States champion. Caught me a little off guard. You know, and honestly, in my original predictions, because I didn't actually release predictions, but I was just kind of thinking, I'm like, you know, I'm going to go with Shinsuke, and then, what is it, my buddy was in my ear, he's like, oh, the LA Knight's not going to drop the belt, and sure enough, LA Knight did, and Shinsuke won, and people were kind of just like, oh, okay. So I kind of rock with this new gimmick, if you will, of Shinsuke Nakamura, but yeah, LA Knight, I was kind of caught off guard. They'll probably drag on this feud for a bit longer, but of all the titles to change hands on this event, I was not thinking that it would be Shinsuke Nakamura winning. Good match overall, though. Decent. It was just run of the mill. You know, no one looked better than the other. It was kind of just like going back and forth. Shinsuke hits his finisher, and that was that. You're kind of like, oh, okay, good enough for me. After that, a triple threat match for the Intercontinental Championship between Braun Breaker, your champion, Sheamus, and Ludwig Kaiser. And I mean, just you put these three in any environment, they are going to deliver. 14 minutes, 25 seconds is how long the match lasted, and it was entertaining. It was super entertaining. I mean, this was pretty good. You know, it was kind of like Kaiser kept attacking Sheamus with a, what is it called? Like a shelag or something. It is some Irish tool or something. I don't know if it's a German tool or something, but I don't know. He kept targeting Sheamus's ribs, which were like a premise of that. They were very injured. There was a big moment. Sheamus was hitting Braun Breaker with a big high cross, I think it is. He puts him up on his shoulders and plants him down. And I really thought the pinfall was going to happen there. Sheamus did attempt a bro kick at one point, couldn't connect due to his injured ribs. And then Breaker was able to hit a spear on Kaiser, driving him out of the ring. And then he hit another spear on Sheamus to retain the belt. So Braun Breaker retains. There was a cool moment where Sheamus got sent over the barricade and Kaiser had his fist in the air. And Sheamus just like rose up from behind him in this menacing mode, kind of reminiscent of The Undertaker, if you will. Braun Breaker jumped over the ropes against these two and hitting them over the announce table. These three were action-packed, and had not been for the main event, this would have easily been the best match on the card. It was super entertaining. I thought it was super entertaining. It delivered everything it needed to. Everyone left looking good, except I would have probably had Ludwig Kaiser take the pin and not Sheamus. You know, Sheamus is 46 years old, looking in phenomenal shape, you know, still delivering amazing matches. I was just a little taken aback that, you know, they chose not to have Ludwig Kaiser take the pin, but I don't know. Braun Breaker remains champion. They're definitely building up Braun Breaker to one day be a World Heavyweight Champion, WWE Champion. But this is a good start. Going on around with the Intercontinental Championship, I like. And that new Intercontinental Championship design looks phenomenal. Thumbs up. After that, singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship, Gunther and Damian Priest, 19 minutes, 20 seconds. I saw this at SummerSlam. It looked the exact same as SummerSlam. Didn't feel as big as SummerSlam. They didn't do as good a job as SummerSlam. But Gunther won. You know, there's not much to complain when they have good wrestling. Finn Balor gets involved again, costing Damian Priest. It's just getting exhausting. And I'm going to be honest. Gunther's finisher of just a rear naked chokehold, which I watched UFC. I know what a real rear naked chokehold looks like. It is so dumb. It is so dull. It really drags all the energy out of a big finish. I really wish he would change it. I mean, there's just something about, like, Lincoln Brown Breaker hitting a spear, Sheamus hitting a bro kick, Roman Reigns spear, CM Punk with the go to sleep, Shinsuke Nakamura with a big kick, LA Knight with his face plant. You know, those are finishes that really get the crowd going, like, big finish, you pin him. When you just do a slow submission, it's not that entertaining, and Finn Balor is just, his stock is just low. You know, I heard Santi Zap, he's a big wrestling YouTuber, he said his stock is at an all-time low, and people forget, him and JD McDonagh are the tag team champions. They never defend the belts, they're never seen with the belts, and then it's almost just like a pesty, it's like your younger brother bothering you. It's like what it feels like with him and Damian Priest. So Damian Priest, probably his last shot at the World Heavyweight Championship for a long time. Gunther will probably hold on to this till WrestleMania until they drop it to John Cena or goodness knows who. I don't know, but I've honestly seen enough. I've seen enough. Let's just be done with Finn Balor and Damian Priest. Gunther, good win for him. He'll end the year as champion to no one's surprise. You know, it's crazy. He started the year as the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. And now, since SummerSlam, he has had a dominant run as World Heavyweight Champion. I mean, he's beaten Damian Priest. He's beaten Randy Orton. Did he beat Cody Rhodes? I can't remember. Did he beat Cody Rhodes? No, I think they had him lose in some regard. I can't remember, but okay match. But the whole reason I tuned in for Survivor Series War Games was for the main event. Roman Reigns, The Usos, Sami Zayn, and CM Punk taking on Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu, Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Bronson Reed. 41 minutes, 55 seconds. The best match of the night, men's War Games. And the storytelling here was peak. It was perfection. It was amazing. It just worked in all regards. You know, obviously the whole tale of the fight up until all 10 men were in the rings was that the new bloodline just had the advantage. You know, Solo Sikoa, Fatu, the Loas, Bronson Reed, they were just destroying everyone. And then finally, CM Punk goes in, then Roman Reigns goes in, and then everything starts going to plan. There's some big moments. Jacob Fatu being put through a table. Jimmy Uso doing a swan dive, if you will, kind of like the Jeff Hardy finisher. Bronson Reed going off the top rope through a table. Great moments. And the finish. Finish was amazing. You know, Solo Sikoa, all of his comrades are down. All of his comrades are taken out. He's hitting with two super kicks, a haluva kick by Sami Zayn, a go-to-sleep by CM Punk, and a big spear from Roman Reigns. And that was that. Phenomenal. Great ending. And honestly, you know, I was hoping for The Rock to come out, but looking at it as a whole, we did not need The Rock to come out. The Rock came out of Bad Blood, that worked, and The Rock will probably return at the Royal Rumble or something like that, but we did not need The Rock here. This is just a good way to end things. This feud continues. There's also some stuff outside the ring, inside the ring, between CM Punk and Roman Reigns. I think we could be building to a match between those two. I mean, CM Punk kept wanting to leave. Roman Reigns wouldn't let him leave the shark cage, if you will, to go into the match. Eventually, we get into the match. Roman Reigns wouldn't help CM Punk up when he helped everyone else up. Then he accidentally hit CM Punk with a spear. Then CM Punk saved him from being put through a table. And then Roman Reigns had CM Punk's back. So Paul Heyman was the only real thing aligning these two. But overall, good match. I think that match gets a 9 out of 10. That match was super entertaining. But yeah, that was kind of it for Survivor Series War Games. If I could have booked anything differently, I probably would have honestly had... I don't even know, honestly. I'm fine with the booking. I'm fine with the booking in all regards. I don't really care, if I'm being honest. You know, I'm waiting for the next big event, which is going to be the Royal Rumble. I mean, we also have NXT Deadline coming up, which is actually going down in Minnesota. I wish I could go to that. But the next big thing is going to be Saturday night's main event, which is going to be going down in New York on December 14th. And there's only two matches currently booked for that event. I don't know if it's actually classified as a PLE. I think it's actually taking place on NBC or something. I don't exactly know the whole premise of it. They don't really have much announced. Last time they did this was in 2008. But, I mean, you have Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens in the main event for the WWE Championship, which at this point we can kind of acknowledge that Cody Rhodes is not dropping the belt to Kevin Owens. Cody Rhodes is going to hang on to this belt until Roman Reigns or The Rock takes it from him. So we'll have to see. But this event will be simulcast airing on NBC and Peacock as a two-hour special. Oh, there you go. You're probably going to get five matches in that two-hour span, maybe less. You're also going to be crowning the first ever inaugural Women's United States Champion, which is pretty exciting. You know, they're actually announcing a Women's United States Championship and Intercontinental Championship. So we get a lot more women's titles, which I guess will break up the roster more. Currently, there's like some weird first round semifinals and stuff. You know, Naomi, Tiffy Stratton, Electra Lopez. The winner of that will take on Machine, and the winner of that will take on Bayley and Chelsea Green. I don't know who they're going to give the belt to, but should be exciting. Should be pretty exciting. But Survivor Series, I you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad, but then again, you know, I've seen Bad Blood. I've seen WrestleMania. I have seen Survivor Series. I've seen Backlash. I've seen all the good events. And when we stack Survivor Series up against everything, it just is not at that level. And when I look at everything as a whole, you know, Gunther's the World Heavyweight Champion. He's not main eventing. Okay, the Women's War Games match, we had all the champions lose. You know, Shinsuke Nakamura winning, Braun Breaker retaining. Those are matches I could have seen on Raw and SmackDown. All right, the whole reason people are tuning in is for this Roman Reigns Bloodline feud. The Bloodline feud is completely taken over WWE, and it's weird to think this will end at some point because this is probably the biggest feud that they've had. This has been going on for five years now. It's incredible. It's still red hot as ever. And the end game here, I know they're probably going to do Roman Reigns versus Solo Sikoa in a singles match because they actually haven't done that yet, surprisingly. So that'll probably be the end game. And once that ends, they might go separate ways until The Rock gets involved. But Survivor Series, we'll leave it to the past. Was it the best Survivor Series ever? No. Was it the worst? Absolutely not. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the final thing. On to this episode, I was thinking about maybe doing a Game of Thrones season ranking. But my one issue with that is it is so hard to rank all the seasons of Game of Thrones because I would have to rewatch every episode, kind of judge my thoughts. So I might push that off until I have more time to do it. But as always, we do have to recap NFL Week 13. There was some interesting action here, interesting action there. We're going to be talking about all of the matchups and how everyone did in fantasy football. Let's get right on into it. As always, we kick things off with a little action on Thursday football, only this was Thanksgiving, so we have three games to watch. And we kick things off with the Bears visiting the Lions, where the Lions won 23-20 in this game. Holy cow. Talk about a tale of two halves and a destructive ending. There were some really wonky endings this week, and it kicked off with this one. So before we get into the gist of the game, fantasy performances, Caleb Williams, 26 fantasy points. Not bad at all. Keenan Allen, 24. DJ Moore, 23. I mean, good performances. Good fantasy performances from the Bears team. For the Lions, Jared Goff, 17. Sam Laporta, 15. Dave Montgomery, 15. You know, pretty average. Pretty run-of-the-mill. Heading to halftime, talk about no score for the Bears whatsoever. 16 rip heading into the second half. Then we kick things off, opening drive, Keenan Allen touchdown. Then Sam Laporta would answer until the fourth quarter would come around where the Bears would get two touchdowns, making the game 23-20, and they were driving. Final drive of the game, Bears are going downfield, they're looking good, they're cooking, and there's under 30 seconds left. Okay, under 30 seconds left, you know, a pass is caught. I can't really remember from who. It was either DJ Moore or Keenan Allen for certain. And they run up, and they were going to call a timeout. They were, like, they should have called a timeout. They had one timeout remaining, and Matt Eberflus selected not to call a timeout. And deep ball to DJ Moore, which is nowhere near the end zone. And time expires. Time expires, like time ran out, and that was that. It was such an anticlimactic finish to such a good game, and everyone knew the Lions would win. I obviously predicted that as well, but I mean, the way they did, just upsetting. And Matt Eberflus was fired the next day on Friday, and that was that. And the Chicago Bears, who at one point were 4-2, were on a roll. They were looking good. 4-8, six-game losing streak, are 0-5. On the road. They have a plus one point differential. So point differential isn't that bad, but I mean, they have not won in a long, long time. Lions, 11-1, 10 game win streak, run of a lifetime. 5-1 at home, looking pretty good. Caleb Williams, 256 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was looking good. Running wise, Caleb Williams ran for 39 yards. DeAndre Swift, 39 yards as well. DJ Moore, 8 catches, 97 yards and a touchdown. Keenan Allen, 5 catches, 73 yards and 2 touchdowns. They were looking very good out there. For Detroit, and I mean, we know with Detroit already, this is a team game. No one really stands out as big above the rest. Goff, 221 yards, 2 touchdowns. Dave Montgomery, 88 yards rushing. Jahmyr Gibbs, 87 yards rushing. Amon-Ra, 5 catches, 73 yards. Sam Laporta, 3 catches, 6 yards, 2 touchdowns. So Sam Laporta catching the 2 touchdowns. The Lions scored. Good stuff for the Lions. And I mean, 11-1. They're looking good. They get the Packers next week. The Bills, Bears again, 49ers, Lions. Detroit's looking to end the year as the best team in the NFC. Their only real competition is going to be the Eagles, who are 10-2, along with the Vikings, who are 10-2 now. Other than that, you know, Packers will be a game behind. But, I mean, Lions looking to run away and maybe make it to the Super Bowl. Best of luck to them. As for the Bears, you know, I can look at the rest of their schedule, but all I'll tell you is that they should not be losing all these close games, and they keep losing all these close games. So embarrassing stuff. Embarrassing stuff if you're a Bears fan. How about that? Giants visited the Cowboys in another divisional matchup. Cowboys win 27-20. Malik Nabers, 15 fantasy points. Drew Locke, just under 15. And Tyrone Tracy, 14.5 for the Giants. For the Dolphins, we'll get to them in a second. For the Cowboys, Rico Dowdle, 21.3. Dallas defense, 18. And Cooper Rush, 11.3 are your top three fantasy performers. Cowboys with the win here are now 5-7 on a little two-game winning streak. Hello, getting their first win at home. Long overdue for this team. And, you know, they're not out of the playoff race yet. You know, the wild card is going to be tough. Those extra two spots are going to be filled up. So they're going to have to win out most likely. But Cowboys showing some prowess here. As for the Giants, 2-10. 7-game losing streak. Yeah, Giants are. Giants did not improve at all with the acquisition of Malik Nabers. Poor Malik. He's the only bright spot on this team. I won't lie, though. I mean, this game wasn't necessarily out of reach. I mean, it was 13-10 heading into halftime. Then 2 touchdowns in the third. Pretty much gave the Cowboys a 27-10 lead. And then fourth quarter comes around and boom. To a touchdown, field goal, and then just couldn't get the ball back, and the Cowboys won. Drew Locke in his first game starting for the Giants, 178 yards and a pick. Not the best. Did run in a touchdown, ran for 57 yards during the game. Tyrone Tracy, 9 rushes, 1 touchdown, 32 yards. Devin Singletary, 7 rushes, 23 yards. Malik Nabers, 8 catches, 69 yards. Probably the biggest bright spot on the team. There's little to be done on this team. Wandale Robinson, who at one point was looking to be wide receiver one on the team, 2 catches, 6 yards, has fallen into wide receiver 3 territory, honestly. Not looking too hot. For Dallas, Cooper Rush, 295 yards and a touchdown, was decent. Rico Dowdle, 22 rushes, 112 yards, and a touchdown. CeeDee Lamb getting injured in this contest. Not the best. Brandon Cooks caught a touchdown on one of his 3 catches. So, Cowboys, you know, season's not completely over. There's still a little bit of hope, but you do have to remember this defense has given up 339 points. The next closest defense is the Panthers, who have the worst defense in the league. Giants 0-6 at home will look to finally get a win when they host the Saints next Sunday. But yeah, pretty abysmal stuff all around. Our final game on football Thursday, Thanksgiving Thursday, was the Dolphins visiting the Packers, and I just knew that the Dolphins were not going to thrive in the snowy weather as the Packers win 30-17. Tua, 25 fantasy points, Jonu Smith, 21, Devin Achane, 21, and even Tyreek Hill had 18 to 20 fantasy points, depending on which type of league you were in. So, good fantasy performance from some of those guys. For the Packers, 21 from Josh Jacobs, 19.7 for Jaden Reed, and 18.96 for Jordan Love. Pretty competitive matchup, but I mean, it started off 14 rip for the Packers. Then it turned into 24-3 at halftime, 27-3 for eventually Devin Achane finally got in the end zone in the third quarter. Garbage time touchdown from Tyreek at least put them into double digits, but other than that, abysmal stuff from the Dolphins. To 365 yards, 2 touchdowns. Just really needed the defense to step up. Couldn't really do that. Running game was also shut down, 39 rushing yards the entire game. Passing wise, Jonu Smith, 10 catches, 113 yards. Tyreek Hill, 6 catches, 83 yards and a touchdown. Chane, 8 catches, 56 yards and a touchdown. And Jalen Wall, 4 catches, 53 yards. So a lot of passes, a total of 46 attempts for Tua Tagovailoa. He's looking good. You know, he's looking better. 5-7 for the Dolphins. I think it is looking kind of like a Cowboys scenario where you're going to need to win out And this team is very average. They boast a minus 34 point differential, so not the best. And when I look at the three spots that are going to be remaining, I'm looking at the Chargers, the Broncos, the Ravens, the Colts perhaps. So it's going to be tough for the Dolphins to make the playoffs. For the Packers, they're definitely going to be filling up that sixth spot. In my mind, the NFC North is fantastic this year. Vikings, Lions, Packers. Jordan Love, 274 yards, two touchdowns. Jacobs, 43 rushing yards and a touchdown. Add that to four catches for 74 yards. Tucker Kraft, six catches, 78 yards. But it's Jaden Reed, similar to Sam LaPorta, three catches, two of which were for touchdowns. So good stuff there. Packers, good for them. Good for the Packers. I mean, 9-3. They have an impressive 78-plus point differential. Three-game win streak. They got a big game with the Lions coming up this Thursday. Holy cow, what a game that's going to be. Excited for that one. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. First football, I will say this was kind of a damper on Thanksgiving footballs. It was kind of a blowout, and it was kind of like, you know, you really need an exciting game after a long, long Thanksgiving. Getting into Black Friday, how about you have the Raiders taking on the Chiefs in a close matchup where I tell you the finishes this week were absolutely insane as the Chiefs escape with yet another win. Insane 19-17, the Chiefs hold on. Brock Bowers, 30 fantasy points, one of the best fantasy performances, if not the best, of the entire weekend. Aiden O'Connell, 19.6, and Jacoby Myers, 15.7. For the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, 16.6, Travis Kelce, 13.8, and DeAndre Hopkins, 13. Chiefs, 19-17, get the win. Tail of this game, pretty even. It was 10-3 heading into halftime in favor of the Chiefs. A lot of field goals from Matthew Wright this game. Trey Tucker would get a 58-yard touchdown pass from Aiden O'Connell in the fourth. And then on the final drive of the game, you know, they are cooking. Raiders are cooking in the most suspicious format. You know, ball is spiked. They then come up to the line. And timeout might have been called. And when they go up, Aiden O'Connell is not even looking at the quarterback. He's waiting for a play call or something. And the center just hikes the ball. It hits Aiden in the chest. And Chiefs defensive lineman dives on it. And that was the game. Just such a screwy finish. It looked, people are throwing rigged around. It did look oddly suspicious that the center hikes the ball. And you would have to understand, like, was the center in on it? Was Aiden O'Connell in on it? Were the coaches just trying to screw them up? I don't know, but it certainly was odd, and it sucks to see the Chiefs winning this game. Aiden O'Connell, 340 yards and two touchdowns. Great game from him. Rushing-wise, Mick Cormick, the third-string running back, maybe even the fourth-string, 12 rushes, 64 yards, led the day. Brock Bowers, a monster. He's shattering all tight end rookie records. It's insane. 10 catches, 140 yards, touchdown. He is one of my favorite people to have on my fantasy football team. Jacoby Myers, 6 catches, 97 yards. Trey Tucker's one catch was that 58-yard touchdown. So good for him. For the Chiefs, Patty Mahomes, 26 for 46, only a 50% completion percentage. 306 yards and a touchdown. Pacheco in his return game, 44 yards on 7 rushes. Kareem Hunt, same number of rushes, but only 15 yards. D-Hop, 4 catches, 90 yards. It was the wide receiver Watson, his one catch was a touchdown. Kelce had 7 catches for 68 yards. Worthy, 5 catches, 54 yards. Just kind of another Chiefs win. Another freaking Chiefs win. They escape with it again, and it was just frustrating. It's frustrating to see the Chiefs win over and over and over again. Oh, my goodness. 11-1, they've clinched a playoff spot officially. Might clinch the division, actually, now that I think about it. Actually, no, I think they've just clinched a playoff spot. 6-0 at home, 5-1 on the road, two-game win streak, plus 54-point differential. Yeah, this Chiefs team is getting better as they go. Can they win out, though? I don't know. The Chargers, after seeing how close the Bills played them, you know, the Chargers, that'll be a tough matchup, I truly feel. They only beat them by 7 when they played in September. They got the Browns, I'll be honest. They should probably manhandle the Browns. They then have the Texans, the way this Texans team has been playing, especially it's going to be at home for the Chiefs. They'll win that. Steelers on Christmas, I really like the Steelers' chances for that. And then January 5th against the Broncos, you never know with this Broncos team. Truly, you never know what you're going to get. But Raiders, season's over. They have a minus 110-point differential, 8-game losing streak. Oh, man. Brock Bowers, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., get all my rookies out of all these terrible teams. Goodness me, my poor, sweet rookies. Getting into Sunday football, you had the Colts taking on the Patriots, and, oh, man, my upset pick of the Patriots was almost going to hit, and then they give up a give up a comeback. Literally, with 12 seconds left, Alec Pierce catches a touchdown, and then Anthony Richardson plugs in a two-point conversion, and that was game. Insane, and it sucks because the Patriots really put a complete game together until the end, where it ended up not being a complete game. Fantasy-wise, Richardson, 21.16 fantasy points in the 25-24 win. Jonathan Taylor, 17.3. Oof, glad he cooled off. He had 16 in the first half, and I'm playing him in my big 16-man league, which I finished second in. Hello, playoffs around the corner. Me and my roommate Ryan in a battle. Alec Pierce, 9.6. For the Pats, Drake May, just under 20. Hunter Henry, 14.5. Austin Hooper, just over 14. For the Colts, good win for them, keeping their not only playoff hopes alive, but keeping a chance of winning the AFC South alive. They're 6-7. Coming off of a win, they are only two games behind the Texans, oddly enough. And looking how bad the Titans and Jaguars are, the Colts have a real possibility to make the playoffs. Now, their competition, if they can't win the division, is going to be the Ravens, who are 8-5, Chargers 8-4, Broncos 7-5. So it's going to be tough, but I would not count the Colts out. Richardson, 109 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, wasn't pretty. Did rush for 48 yards and a touchdown. JT, 96 yards rushing, also had 1 catch for a touchdown. Pittman, 5 catches, 42 yards. Alec Pierce, 2 catches, one of which was a touchdown. I mean, when Anthony Richardson only throws 24 passes, only 12 are caught, yeah, you know, the wide receivers are not going to get a lot of points. Drake May, 238 yards, touchdown and a pick, pretty run the mill. Antonio Gibson got a touchdown despite only having 7 carries compared to Ramondre Stevenson's 18 as a starter. But this was the tight end's day. Hunter Henry, 7 catches, 45 yards, and Austin Hooper, 4 catches, 40 yards, and a touchdown. Good stuff for the Patriots, despite a loss. You know, you just have to look at the performances from the players at this point. 3-10, 3-game losing streak. It's rough. 1-5 at home. They're nearing that minus 100 point differential. If you're the Patriots, just try and muster up whatever you can to round out the year. Colts, rest of their schedule, they play the Broncos, the Colts, the Giants, and the Jaguars. I'm looking at least 3 wins there, you would think, for the Colts team, but honestly, you never know. But Colts could make the playoffs, maybe. Maybe they'll miss it by a game. We'll have to see. Keeping Sunday action rolling, Steelers and Bengals, how about giving us a 44-38 barn burner? Hello, in an AFC North matchup. Steelers win 44-38. Incredible. Truly incredible. How about Chris Boswell? 15 fantasy points. He's my kicker, and I love him. For the Steelers, top 3 fantasy performances: Russell Wilson, 26.86, Najee Harris, 24.9, and Pat Freiermuth, 18.8. Not too shabby. For the Bengals, Jamar, 20.6, Joe Scheisty, 19.26, and Chase Brown, 19 for the running back. He was projected 18, and I was like, that seems like a lot, and then it turns out it wasn't a lot. Tail this game, I mean, back and forth from the get-go. We had a total of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 touchdowns combined in this game. Incredible. When it looked like all hope was over, Andrea Sova caught a pass from Joe Burrow with 2 minutes and 39 seconds left. Steelers just never gave up the ball once they got it back. So Bengals lose another heartbreaker. This is their third straight loss. They're 1-5 at home, 4-8. It's insane this team is going to miss the playoffs. It truly is. 335 points put up, 340 given up. It's insane how good this offense has been, and the defense has just not been able to back it up. For Pittsburgh, Russell Wilson, 414 yards, 3 touchdowns and a pick. I'm sorry. Is there something wrong in Denver? Because Russ is playing like he's about to go to a Super Bowl out here in Pittsburgh. Najee, 75 yards rushing and a touchdown. Also, 6 catches, 54 yards. Najee Harris looking like a prime Alabama running back. Cordell Patterson even ran the ball 3 times. How about that? Cordell Patterson ring chasing much. Hello. Pat Freiermuth, 6 catches, 68 yards and a touchdown. George Pickens, 3 catches, 74 yards and a touchdown. Calvin Austin, 2 catches, one of which was a touchdown. Good stuff. For Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, 309 yards, 3 touchdowns and a pick. Chase Brown, 70 yards rushing and a touchdown. Jamar, 6 catches, 86 yards and a touchdown. T. Higgins, 5 catches, 69 yards and a touchdown. Don't forget Mike Gesicki, 5 catches, 53 yards. Steelers are just so sneaky good this year. 9-3, they're guaranteed pretty much to be 500. It's absolutely incredible. An impeccable 5-2 on the road. Bengals, season's over. Season's over for the Bengals. Even if they win out, they're not going to make the playoffs with a 9-8 record. It's just not going to happen nowadays in today's league. But for the Steelers, I mean, 9-3, you are, you know, you're not going to, I don't see the Chiefs and Bills losing more, and then the Steelers are going to win, but you're going to win your division. You know, the Ravens, they just, they've pulled out over the Ravens. It's impeccable. You got some close games coming up. Got some close games coming up for the Steelers. If my site doesn't close, every time I click on the Steelers, it takes me to the Chargers. Can the NFL fix their site? There we are. Steelers take on the Browns. Ooh, looking to get a rematch win there. Then the Eagles, then the Ravens, then the Chiefs, then the Bengals. Wow, the Steelers have an impeccably hard schedule, but this is an impeccably good team. So we'll see how they round things out. Tough stuff for the Bengals. It happens. Shocker win here as the Chargers beat the Falcons in Atlanta 17-13. Ladd McConkey, the rookie, 20.7. Rookies are thriving this year. Chargers defense 17, and Cameron Dicker, the kicker, 12 fantasy points. He was playing me. For the Falcons, Bijan Robinson, another man I was playing in my 16-man league, 25.5. Drake London, 17.3. And Ray McLeod, 13.3. This game, man, kicks it off. Bijan Robinson starting the game with a touchdown. Momentum was looking to go in the Falcons' favor. Then Cameron Dicker ends the first half with 3 field goals, 9-7. Then Young Hoku makes it 10-9. Then a 61-yard pick six from the Chargers would make it 17-10. Young Hoku would hit a little 26-yard chipper to end the third, and then no scoring in the fourth. They couldn't even get in the freaking red zone. I mean, this Chargers defense was stout. This Chargers defense was good. And it's weird when I see the Chargers in certain games and they are looking completely awful, such as when they play the Ravens, such as when they play the Bengals. Even when they played the Titans, they weren't that good. And then they step up here and they just look like a team that can actually compete. Impeccable. For the Chargers, Justin Herbert, 147 yards. Pretty average. Rushing-wise, Gus Edwards, 32 yards. You know, Ladd McConkey, 9 catches, 117 yards, was the only one flourishing. All right, this was a defensive battle through and through. And the reason it was a defensive battle, Kirk Cousins, 245 yards, 4 picks. Kirk Cousins could not connect with any of his wide receivers. Bijan, 102 yards, a touchdown, the only bright spot on this team. Insane. Falcons couldn't get a touchdown through the air. And this is a big dampener. Okay, this is a huge dampener. For the Falcons, let's talk about the positive. Chargers, 8-4, going to make the playoffs, it's looking like. They have only given up 188 points on the year, all right? I want you to know there's not a single other defense in the entire National Football League after the Lions gave up 20 to the Bears that has given up, what am I trying to say? There's no other team that has given up at least that many points. What am I trying to say? The Chargers have a good defense. That's what I'm trying to say. Goodness me, my grammar. Coming off a win here, they're 4-2 at home, 4-2 on the road. Impressive stuff. A plus 72 point differential. Chargers looking to end the year on a bang. Maybe win the division? Man, probably not. For the Falcons, they've completely lost the division. They are now tied with the Buccaneers. All right, for the lead in the NFC South, they do hold a tiebreaker. So with a 6-6 record, they have a minus, gosh, can I do my math here? They have like a minus 40 point differential. 3-game losing streak. It's been rough. Rough game after rough game. I don't know what's going on. Kirk just cannot get it going with this Falcons team. And the Buccaneers, on a little run, are looking to pass the Falcons. We got some big games coming up, including Falcons and Vikings next Sunday. Kirk's return to Minnesota. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't wait. It's going to be a great game. Chargers, best of luck to your future endeavors. Keeping our games rolling, Seahawks and the Jets. Seahawks complete a comeback win, 26-21. Good job to the Seahawks in that one. Jets, 3-game losing streak, 3-9. Season's over. Season's over for the Jets. They suck. 2-4 at home. Yep. Literally, Aaron Rodgers might retire. Aaron Rodgers should retire. The Jets are awful. As for the Seahawks, 7-5, 3-game winning streak, plus 7-point differential. They're leaders in the NFC West. You could be looking at a playoff team in this Seattle Seahawks team. Seattle defense, 16, another stellar week. Geno Smith, 12, and Zach Charbonnet, 12. For the Jets, Devontae, 17, Jets defense, 17, Aaron Rodgers, 14. Tail of this game, I mean, you get things kicked off with a bang. It was 21-10. Heading into halftime. Scratch that. It was 21. There were some blocked field goals here and there, but all I know is that the Jets scored all 3 touchdowns in the first half. Early first half, too, within the first 25 minutes. No, 20 minutes of the game. So 15 minutes, then 5 minutes in the second. That's all the points they scored. No scoring in the third. They're down. Okay, 21-16 with 13 minutes left. Hit a field goal. Now you're down 21-19. Okay, 5 minutes left. Zach Charbonnet punches it in, and yet again, Aaron Rodgers gets picked off to end a game. Insane. Seahawks complete the comeback. Great stuff. Geno Smith, 206 yards and a touchdown average. Charbonnet, despite having a quarter of the rushes Kenneth Walker did, had half of his yards and a touchdown. Kenneth Walker could not get it going. Jackson Smith and Jigba and DK Metcalf both catching 4 passes, 74 yards and 66 yards respectively. It's Barner, the tight end, that hauls in the only touchdown through the air. For the Jets, Aaron Rodgers, 185 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Pretty average. Breece Hall, 60 yards. Devontae and Davis, the running back, catching the only touchdowns for the team. Garrett Wilson held in check. Man, nothing much more to say. Jets are looking awful. Seahawks are looking up. And Jackson Smith and Jigba, I'm going to need you to pop off next week. Really. Jackson, look at me. Look at me, Jackson Smith and Jigba. I know you listen to this podcast. No, he doesn't. But I need you to pop off. And you, I trust. Next matchup, AFC South divisional matchup, Texans and the Jaguars. And this Texans team is not going to do well against the top of the AFC. Okay, they're going to make the playoffs. Texans are 8-5. But they just keep getting played close by these teams. Jaguars almost make a comeback, lose 23-20, but man, I really thought they were going to do it. Joe Mixon, 21.9 fantasy points for the Texans. Nico, 20. Dalton Schultz, 17. For the Jaguars, Parker Washington, 24.3. Mac Jones, 20. And Brian Thomas Jr., my favorite wide receiver, 18.7. Absolutely love him. You know, this game was all about over. Okay, it's 23-7, I want to say. It was 23-6 when 7 minutes 49 seconds left, Parker Washington catches a touchdown. 3 minutes left, Brian Thomas Jr. catches a touchdown, and they just couldn't get the ball back from the Texans to end the game. But Houston's, their defense completely collapsed. They were doing so good. They were truly doing so good. Held them to a field goal in the first half, field goal in the third, and then it was like the end of the game. They just couldn't hang on. And if you can't hang on against the Jaguars, you're not going to be able to hang on against the Ravens, the Bills, and Chiefs especially. So this is a telltale sign. But to no one's surprise, the Texans winning this one. For Houston, 242 yards for Stroud, 1 touchdown. Joe Mixon, 101 yards and a touchdown. Nico Collins, 8 catches, 119 yards. Schultz, 5 catches, 61 yards and a touchdown. Tank Dell, only 1 catch for 23 yards. For Jacksonville, Mac Jones, 235 yards and 2 touchdowns as Trevor Lawrence goes out with a concussion on a dirty hit from a cornerback. Oh my gosh, I don't know what his name is, like Elise or something. Trevor Lawrence was sliding, gets clipped right in the head, immediately freezes up, has to be carted off. It was bad. They should suspend him. Trevor Lawrence, oh man, rough stuff. Rushing game, I can't believe how bad Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby are doing. It honestly makes no sense why they're doing so bad. Combined 20 rushes, combined only 74 yards. That's it. Pretty rough. Parker Washington, 6 catches, 103 yards and a touchdown. Brian Thomas Jr., 4 catches, 76 yards and a touchdown were stellar. Evan Engram, 7 catches, 41 yards. This Jaguars team is probably the worst in the league. You know, Raiders all competing to see who is the worst team. But Jags are 0-6 on the road, 5-game losing streak, 2-10. Yet Brian Thomas Jr. continues to be a bright spot. So we love Brian Thomas Jr. Sucks this Jaguars team is completely awful. But Texans lead the division, and we'll be looking for a playoff matchup coming in the future. Keeping our noon games rolling, Vikings host the Cardinals, and hoofda, the Vikings just every week, they have to play their teams close every week. You think they're going to lose, and they pull something out. Vikings win 23-22, getting a touchdown with 1:13 left. Holy cow. And then our defense picks off Kyler Murray to end the game. But there's one point in this game. It was 19-16, and I was like, we're going to lose. We're going to lose. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. caught a touchdown, and I was like, is this real? Is this really happening? But then, thankfully, Johnny Munt answered. It was a battle of field goals between John Romo and Chad Ryland this game. But, I mean, it was a gritty win. Vikings 10-2, 5-game win streak. Talk about a crazy point differential. We're at plus 73, 72, something like that. Great stuff there. It's insane. 78, that's what it is, plus 78. Vikings, oh man, 10-2, we look for the playoffs, and we look to kind of steal the NFC North. If the Lions can lose one game and we can win, it may come down to us playing them on that final Week 18 game. But good win for the Vikings. Cardinals 6-6 have now lost their lead in the NFC West, but they are second. They are second, looking for maybe a play-in game. Two-game losing streak, though, plus 7-point differential. This was a good performance by them, but the Vikings' defense, when it mattered most, came up big. Fantasy-wise, Trey McBride 21.6, Marvin Harrison Jr. 17, Chet Ryland, the kicker, 16, Sam Darnold 19.6, JJ 16.9, our kicker Romo 13. Murray, 260 yards, a touchdown, and two picks when it mattered most. Two picks when it mattered most, funny enough. James Conner, 68 yards rushing, was really tearing it up on us. McBride, 12 catches, 96 yards. Marvin Harrison, 5 catches, 60 yards, a touchdown. Even Cedric Wilson, 5 catches, 54 yards. Actually, it might be Malik Wilson, something like that. I don't know. Minnesota, Sam Darnold, 235 yards and two touchdowns. Aaron Jones, 22 yards rushing. Sam Darnold, 22 yards rushing. Cam Akers, 22 yards rushing. Pretty odd how that works out. JJ, 7 catches, 99 yards. Addy, 4 catches, 54 yards. Hawkinson, only 3 catches, 28 yards. And Munt, only 2 catches, one of which was a touchdown. And Aaron Jones, only 3 catches, one of which was a touchdown. Good win, Vikings. Good win. That's all we need. That's all we need. We just need to keep escaping with wins. Keep us a-moving. You know, we got a little win streak back up and going. I'm happy with how we've been playing. We got the Falcons next week. Then the Bears, then the Seahawks, and the Packers, and the Lions. It's not an easy schedule, but truly, truly, I tell you, this is a winnable schedule. It is a winnable schedule. I know that for a fact. For the Cardinals, I mean, you never know what you're going to get. So it doesn't matter who they play, bad team, good team. It's hit or miss with this Cardinals team. So that's all we got there. Titans and Commanders, not much to say about this one, folks. Commanders blow out the Titans, 42-19, the biggest blowout of the week. Commanders finally back in the win column. How about that? 376 points for one of the best offenses in the league. 8-5, our second in the NFC East. As for the Titans, I mean, to no one's surprise, they are, thankfully, they're in the conference, same conference as the Jags. 3-9, abysmal, minus 111-point differential. Yeah, rough stuff for the Titans. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, 21.1, gets a 2-touchdown game. This guy's incredible. On my bench, might have to start him next week. Will Levis, 16.18, and Nick Folk, 9. Jane Daniels, Rookie of the Year, 27.64. Terry McLaurin, 27.3. Brian Robinson Jr., 17.9. I mean, this game started off rough, and it just kept going. Game started off 28-0, including 3 first-half touchdowns. Nothing really happened in the third quarter for the Commanders before they rattled off 2 more touchdowns in the fourth. How about a 7-touchdown game for this team? Incredible. Will Levis, 212 yards and 2 touchdowns. Wasn't awful. Pollard, 8 rushes, 35 yards, was held in check. Westbrook-Ikhine, 3 catches, 61 yards, 2 touchdowns. The only bright spot for the Titans. For the Commanders, Jane Daniels, 206 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 pick, 25 for 30 on completions. Pretty damn good. Brian Robinson, 103 yards rushing for a touchdown. Christian Rodriguez Jr., 94 yards rushing and a touchdown. Jane Daniels, 9 rushes and a touchdown. Insane. Scary Terry, 8 catches, 73 yards and a touchdown. Zach Ertz, 3 catches, one of which was a touchdown. Good stuff for the Commanders. Good stuff. They will definitely be making the playoffs. I mean, as it stands right now, you're going to be having the Eagles, the Seahawks, Lions, and the Falcons. Then you're other play-in teams are going to be the Vikings, Packers, and Commanders. So it's going to be tough for teams like the Bucks, who are 6-6, or actually Bucks and Falcons are going to be dueling for the NFC South. But teams like the Cardinals, if you will, Rams, they're 6-6. You got a lot of 6-6 teams here. It's going to be tough for you when you have teams that already have 8 wins, 9 wins to really make it. But the Commanders, I'm pretty sure, are locked in, so I wouldn't be too worried there. I'll tell you who should be worried, and that is Buccaneers fans, because the Panthers almost did the unthinkable. Panthers almost upset the Buccaneers. Buccaneers win 26-23 in overtime, but man, you almost saw a Bryce Young classic here. Buccaneers 6-6 now, tied for first in the NFC South, are technically second due to the tiebreaker. Panthers 3-9, worst offense in the league, 217.4, but don't count them out, okay? They really showed out here. They really put on a truly great performance. Bucky Irving for the Bucks, 27.5 fantasy points. Bye-bye, Rashad White. You have lost your starting job. Mike Evans, 25.8. The kicker, Chase McLaughlin, 15. For the Panthers, Adam Thielen, second game back, 24 fantasy points. Bryce Young, 23.62. And Tommy Tremble, 12.7. This game, man. This game, I want you to know the Panthers were up 23-20 before Chase McLaughlin hit a 51-yarder to tie the game. Then back and forth, Chase would end it with a 30-yard field goal with 2 minutes 50 seconds left. But, I mean, man, Panthers played their heart out in this one. Baker, 235 yards, touchdown, 2 picks, held in check. Bucky Irving, 152 yards and a touchdown. Insane. Rashad White even rattled off 76 yards rushing. Mike Evans, 8 catches, 118 yards, and a touchdown. He was looking stellar. For the Panthers, Bryce Young, 298 yards and a touchdown. Even ran in a touchdown of his own. Chubb Hubbard held the 43 yards in a fumble. Really was held in check. Thielen, 8 catches, 99 yards, and a touchdown. Tremble, 5 catches, 77 yards. Leggett, 4 catches, 53 yards. Not too bad from the Panthers. This is really going to be the Buccaneers' chance to really win the division. Winnable game against the Raiders. Tough game, Chargers. You never know with the Cowboys team, but they should probably win that. Panthers, December 29th, they should win. Saints game on the 5th, they should win in January. You never know what you're going to get, but the Buccaneers' playoff chances, I really like it. I really like their odds. I think they can do it, but at the same time, you never know what you're going to get with that team. Good game, went to overtime. Panthers, you know, it's hard to hate you. It's hard to hate the Panthers. You really feel more sympathy than you do hate for them. Good game here. Rams and Saints. Another upset pick of mine with the Saints. They freaking, oh man, they almost had it. They lost it at the buzzer. Every upset pick I had didn't hit. They all lost their games at the buzzer. Rams keeping their playoff hopes alive, winning here. 6-6 now. Third in the NFC West in the 21-14 victory. As for the Saints, 4-8. Playoff chances have probably dwindled, but you're only minus 5-point differential. Not too bad. On some more sad news, Taysom Hill out for the year with a leg injury. That one really hurts the Saints team. Kyren, 18 fantasy points. Puka, 17. Matt Stafford, 15.6. For the Saints, Kamara, 15.9. Derek, 14.5. And Valdes-Scantling, 11.6. Tell this game. You know, it was pretty weird. Pretty weird game. You know, first half, 6-0 for the Saints with 2 field goals. Both 54-yarders from Blake Grubb, so props to him. Kyren Williams would finally get some points on the board for the Rams in the third before DeMarcus Robinson would catch a touchdown pass. Valdes-Scantling would then catch a touchdown pass with 9 minutes left. Puka would catch a touchdown pass. And no scoring would happen in the final 9 minutes of the game. Stafford, 183 yards and 2 touchdowns was all right. Kyren, 104 yards and touchdown was the star. Puka, 5 catches, 56 yards and touchdown. Cooper Kupp, 3 catches, 117 yards. Sorry, 17 yards. No 100 for him. Pretty abysmal day. DeMarcus Robinson also caught a touchdown. For the Saints, Derek Carr, 184 yards of touchdown. Average. Alvin Kamara, 23 yards. 23 rushes for 112 yards. Did that. Valdes-Scantling caught his one touchdown of the game on a deep ball. Run-of-the-mill. Run-of-the-mill. Saints playoff chances have ended. For the Rams, tied in second. Only a game behind the Seahawks. NFC West is wide open. The most close division in the entire league. Following that, your final game for 3:30 had the Eagles and the Ravens. And in the Battle of the Birds, the Eagles remained supreme. Of course, an Eagle's always going to beat a Raven. What are you talking about? And Saquon and Jalen Hurts, my two sweet, precious boys, did fantastic. In the 24-19 win, 19.7 fantasy points for Saquon, 17.62 for Jalen Hurts. Phenomenal. Also, Dallas Goedert, 12.5. Lamar, 25.38 for the Ravens. Mark Andrews, 18.9. And Isaiah Likely, 14.8. A little tight end day for the Ravens. You know, with 3 seconds left, the Ravens were able to make it a 19-24 game, but I mean, it was pretty much 24-12 the remainder of the fourth quarter. You know, Saquon Barkley rattled off a 25-yard run to really seal the deal in the fourth quarter. Tucker, man, not hot. Tucker missed some field goals. He missed an extra point. It was a pretty rough day for him. Pretty rough day. Hurts, 118 yards and a touchdown. Also, 9 rushes, one of which was a touchdown. Saquon, 107 yards and a touchdown, including 2 catches. A.J. Brown, 5 catches, 66 yards. Dallas Goedert, 3 catches, one of which was a touchdown. Good win for the Eagles. 10-2, 8-game win streak. You have a plus 102-point differential. They're good. They're solid. They're going to win the NFC East. They're going to be a tough team to play in the playoffs. As for Baltimore, Baltimore, what's going on? 8-5. Lamar, 237 yards, 2 touchdowns. Henry, 82 yards, no touchdown. Lamar actually had 79 yards rushing. Andrews caught a touchdown, Likely caught a touchdown. Zay, 3 catches, 74 yards. I needed more from you. Zay Flowers, come on. Ravens, man, I don't know what's up with this Ravens team. 5 losses, they've just lost some close ones. They've lost to some good teams. They've been upset by some bad teams. I mean, as I look at the remainder of their schedule, Giants, Steelers, Texans, Browns, I see at least 3 wins there. At least 3 wins for that Ravens team. But I don't know. I don't really know what's going to transpire. Should be tough for them to really make a impact in the playoffs. But Steelers are probably going to win the division. They hold a 2-loss advantage over the Ravens, 9-3 compared to 8-5. So good, sitting pretty if you're a Steelers fan. Final game of NFL Sunday, 49ers and Bills, which used to be a legendary matchup, but the 49ers suck this year. They're incredibly bad, lose 35-10, and the Bills, 10-2, not only clinch a playoff spot, but have clinched the division. Incredible. Good job to the Bills. 7-game win streak, a plus 131 point differential. They're also 6-0 at home. They're good. They're freaking good. 49ers 5-7, 3-game losing streak, minus 25 point differential, are bottom of the NFC West. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. They're the reigning Super Bowl champs. And by the way, they've probably lost McCaffrey for the rest of the year. I actually think they did. He is completely injured again. Despite being injured, 8.7 fantasy points led the entire team, and he went out in the second quarter. Insane. Josh Allen, 28.42, feasted on the 49ers in this snow game. James Cook, 19. Ray Davis, 13.7. Had it not been for an Isaac Grando touchdown in the third, they were probably going to get shut out. I mean, just touchdown after touchdown after touchdown for this team. Impeccable. Brock Purdy, 94 yards. That's it. Mason, 78 yards rushing. McCaffrey, 53 yards rushing. Garendo, 19 yards rushing, including a touchdown. Juan Jennings, 3 catches, 56 yards of the day. Debo, 4 catches, 20 yards, and a fumble. He was not looking good. Kittle, he'll do 1 catch for 7 yards. As for Buffalo, Josh Allen, 148 yards there and 2 touchdowns. Also, on the ground, he ran in a touchdown. James Cook, 107 yards, he ran in a touchdown. Ray Davis, 63 yards, he ran in a touchdown. Everyone was running in a touchdown, and Josh Allen even caught. It was a weird scenario with Allen where he had the ball pitched back to him from Amari Cooper to get the touchdown. I don't even know how you consider that. It was a little pitch to Allen. But Josh Allen went off. One of the best quarterbacks in the league. Maybe he could win MVP. I don't know. MVP is really up in the air this year. Could go to anyone. I really won't complain unless something big happens the rest of the stretch. But good win for the Bills. And they're sitting pretty to end the season. Really are. 10-2. They could probably win out. I mean, the Rams they should beat. Lions will be a really close game. Pats they should win. Jets they should win. Pats they should win. You know, I don't really know what's going to transpire there, but Bills really have a promising team this year, and it's going to be interesting to see if them or the Ravens can overcome the Chiefs in the playoffs. As for the 49ers, I mean, I don't even know with this team. You know, they're losing everyone left and right. They have no chemistry. They play the Bears at home next weekend. They should win that. Then they play the Rams. That'll be a close game. Then they play the Dolphins. That'll be a close game. Lions game on December 30th should be a loss. Cardinals game January 5th. I have no idea. I truly have no idea. Anything could happen. We'll have to see. But week 13 was a good week of NFL football, and it was something good to fill me. Well, I didn't have any UFC, but fear not, everyone, because UFC 310 is going down next Saturday, December 7th. Kaya Sakura versus Alexander Pantoa for the men's flyweight championship. And in a co-main event five-round fight, Ian Garry takes on Shavkat Rakhmonov. Someone's O has got to go. Also, Cyril Gane, Alexander Volkov, Kron Gracie, Bryce Mitchell. How about a little Duho Choi and Nate Landry? A lot of fun matchups. Excited to cover all that on next week's episode, but that's all we got for today. Kicking off Monday with a bang. I have so much homework to do. Holy cow, my entire first of my final two semesters here at college being wrapped up. You know, we deal with some things here and there, you know, but I always enjoy having obstacles because it gives me a chance to persevere and overcome challenges in life. I hope that's inspired you. I hope you learned something today. I hope you're a Vikings fan, because if you're not, you're not going to be happy when we win the Super Bowl. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.